Chaim Stein about the Rashiva Rabban Zatzal. When did you first come to the yeshiva?
Pesach 1952, right. And stood until mid-Elul 1964.
Uh-huh. Where were you before?
In Tov Yeshiva in Cleveland.
Where were you originally from?
Born and raised in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
Until my bar mitzvah.
So then the bar mitzvah, you went to Tov.
Correct.
And you stayed until?
I was 19.
Until 19. Okay. What motivated you to go to the Rabban Yeshiva?
Because the superior the godliness of the yeshiva and the superior quality of the yeshiva, yeshiva.
How'd you hear about it?
Well, the chaverim, chaver yisle.
Yeah. Did you ever see the yeshiva before that?
Yes, he once came to his term at CERN convention, 1947, and he was there. I had never, didn't hear of him before, and the other gedolim that were there, Ruven, and the others, also never heard of them before. I was a Midwestern boy.
Uh-huh.
I saw them.
Uh-huh. So you came in 1952.
52.
Okay. What was your introduction to the yeshiva?
Nothing unusual. I came in, I think the yeshiva helped me get a chavrusa.
Did you have a seher before?
Yeah, in Borobak. I stood over a Shabbos in Borobak. I went to the yeshiva, I think after Shabbos I went. So with him, and then he accepted me.
Was anything memorable about the first introduction?
No, not really.
Okay, so then he accepted you to go to the yeshiva, and then you came in, what was it, what month was that?
I came Rosh Chodesh Iyar.
Rosh Chodesh Iyar. So then, how were you Masada in the yeshiva itself?
Well, I don't remember. Yeshiva, rather, he got me arranged chavrusas for me. And I could not sleep in the dorm with full. Then we slept in the across the seat in the yeshiva in the Tarshish house, which is the presently roughly where the Beis Eliyahu is.
Uh-huh.
Beis Eliyahu and between Beis Eliyahu and the private way.
It was a big building.
Yeah, a boarding house.
Yeah, right,
there are a number of boarding houses
right.
In Lakewood.
I remember that house. Okay, so then you started going to Shurim, I guess?
Yeah, and the Shurim for everybody. Beginning your Ramation, Eisenman,
yeah.
In the late afternoon, gave blood shear. I attended it for a while.
Uh-huh. And that was every day, or?
Every day, yeah, almost every day at the end of the second Seder.
Uh-huh. And then Yeshiva would come every week to Shabbos.
In those days, he left Tuesday morning and came back Thursday afternoon.
Uh-huh.
Then he began leaving Monday afternoon and coming Thursday evening.
Uh-huh.
Then he began coming home, coming Yeshiva Friday. Then he began leaving Monday and then moved the Shira from Monday to Sunday.
Uh-huh.
And then he began leaving from Sunday afternoon to Shabbos.
Uh-huh.
The Tzach Etziver grew and grew upon him. More things fell on his shoulders.
Well, you mean outside the yeshiva?
Yes, outside the yeshiva. Plus the yeshiva. He was the main fundraiser for the yeshiva.
Uh-huh. So could you describe some of the experiences, that impressions you had by the shiurim?
Yes. Okay, I'll start with the shiurim.
Yeah.
It was an experience and a chinuch in observing and listening to his shiur.
Yeah.
The normal good bocher had to listen very intently with much concentration in order to follow the shiur.
Mm-hmm.
Because he spoke quite fast, even though he repeated himself several times in the shiur, but still, but the topic was fairly deep, of course, and he spoke quick. But we got used to the quickness.
Yeah.
And to the high quality this year, you had to get used to it. Listen intently. You were able to follow.
And yeah, of course, the whole week you prepared for that.
No, that morning you put up Mara Mekaymus.
But it wasn't the sugya that we were learning.
Well, yeah, and so really. And let me see what I finish up regarding my experience with the shiur itself.
Yeah.
One of the best Talmidim of Lakewood, primestine.
Yeah.
One said that he could listen intently for only 1 hour.
Uh-huh.
Afterwards, he couldn't. An average shear with him, 1 hour, 10 minutes. Sometimes less, sometimes more. He can listen intently for 1 hour.
Yeah.
It means it's an accomplishment. It's not easy. A chaver of mine once had a cousin who visited him for a Shabbos. I was encouraged.
We're in Bar Park.
From Bar Park, I came to the Shiva. Bar Park, or from Muncie. I mean,
well, he visited you.
He visited his cousin.
In the Shiva.
Yeah. A chaver of mine had a cousin that visited him for a Shabbos and was encouraged by his cousin to come to the Shiva.
Yeah.
That cousin declined, he said, because he claimed he wouldn't understand the Shiva.
Yeah.
Anyway, because he was out of yeshiva and not learning Masechta, the Machaber replied to him that it would be worth it just to attend the shir in order to observe the way the yeshiva gave, the intensity, the shuckling, the physical effort that went into saying the shir.
Yeah.
One person who learned in Litvish yeshivas in Europe, although he was a Hasidishim, described various yeshivas.
Yeah.
And he described Kletsk, he described the shir in Kletsk as Kabbalah Sater Alein, because it's so broken, you know, the intense movement and heavy involvement in the shir.
You were a Mithurism.
Yeah. Very impressive. He meant the fire of the shir. After a shir, he was often exhausted. He was often exhausted, as one could observe looking at him. That's the shir. Now,
and then what about when he came before the shir? Like he came Thursday, what would go on?
He always said over the shir the two of the top bacharim.
On Thursday.
Whenever the shir was, shir was on Shabbos. In the summer on Shabbos, and in the winter Matzoy Shabbos.
Yeah.
And the other shir was Sunday, Monday then Sunday. He said the shir over to two of the top bacharim before the shir.
When was
the
that?
Night before. It could be Friday night.
Friday night.
He said over the night before, Friday night.
Massage them in before with the
bacharim. Yeah. You have to put it to work, put it together.
Yeah.
He had it in mind. In his mind, he could run through it in 10 minutes, but he had to present it, put it into words.
It's a lot of effort to make the shir come out right.
Yeah, I guess it did.
So to give it over, that's important. The preparation. But what happened when he came? Let's say on Thursday. What was the experience?
I experienced that the Meirev when the shiva was there was different. You could tell it was different when he was not there. I had to wait a little longer with Shemadesha and the Krishna, but when the Ram was there, some called him like that, I felt that the Myra was different.
When he used to come on Thursday, did he ever have like sessions private with the
constantly? He was wherever. He's always there. I can remember he first came in, stuck his head in the base medish, looked right, left. He took in the picture of the whole base medish in a few seconds and walked out.
He would absorb exactly what was.
Yeah, he saw. Yeah, what how many are learning or not? He might be not learning whatever's going on. He saw. And there, when he was there, whoever wanted to could speak to him on various topics. Of course, the person, Chon Avrocha, had things to discuss with him. Later on, Nupshneir, and Goliath, the Bokhrim, it took time. I think his breakfast took 1.5 hours. Not that he ate that much. He just...
discussed things.
Yeah, plus he's always disturbed by telephone calls.
While this was going, he's always had telephone calls.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So what about Shabbos itself?
Hey, listen. Shabbos itself?
Yeah, what was that like?
Yeah, there was only talking and learning throughout the meal. Not that he started. He didn't start. You had to ask a question, and then, that started him off. Mm-hmm. And then, once he started him off, he kept on talking, and there were discussions, even taking him. But you had to ask him. And when it was quiet, the silence was embarrassing. Mm. No one had a question. And once you start inside, it went. Then there's somebody, everyone could to participate.
Were people like afraid to start there?
No. I'd ask a question, but there was not a problem. Never a problem.
But did anybody ever try to hack a mine this year?
In the beginning, when I came, there were a few yet that were doing it. But he saw clearly the Shiva didn't appreciate it.
Uh-huh.
So after a while, those strong-minded people left, and uh-huh. after the first year or two or so, it stopped completely.
Uh-huh. There was not much of a... Because some of the Tommy told me that they tried to ask questions, and if it wasn't stimming exactly, it would be like fire.
Yeah, they had less tolerance for a question in the shir than during the Shabbos table.
No, but I mean, he was very strong in his conviction of what he was saying, that it was like it was very well thought out, that it was by him like a solid thing.
He defended that the shir was his life.
Yeah.
He's trying to slug up a shear, seemingly, invented or not. He defended it like he defended his life.
Mm-hmm.
But not necessarily. I mean, a strong talk, but not with Bizyonis. Not necessarily. Sometimes, yeah, we felt he did. Let me maybe read to my what I have.
Yeah, please.
Okay. I've noted that he, when I talked to him, he spoke to me, but the second that he finished talking to me, that's the second that he began learning. I once came in, I forgot what the topic was. As he was finishing, he began chuckling. And the second that he finished, that second he jerked his head to the Gemara and began learning.
Uh-huh.
And then the second time I noticed, I was in Bishmedish, and someone, an old Klesk, I think, Novinensky, I think that was the name, was learning with an Einikum. After that, Shiva asked him, how did it go? Did that? And then, well, he got a reply, then he immediately jerked his head to the Gemara and began learning.
He got
what he wanted to do, but wasn't interested in and anymore. He jerked his head to the Gemara and began learning.
Who was he learning with?
I think it was Rav Novinensky, an old Kletzker. I think that he was in I'm Lamed in the RJHA, I think so.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, but he came a few times.
I mean, he wasn't steady.
No. He was already out of Lakewood.
Uh-huh.
I knew when I saw him.
Uh-huh.
Although he had a very strong personality and presented his views very strongly in other facets of life, he was not that strong. For example, he was not a good fundraiser.
Uh-huh.
How come another Shetifon Nevocho wondered, with such a godel ador as a yeshiva, how could the Lakewood yeshiva be so deeply in debt?
Uh-huh.
The reason is, he could not ask strongly a gvir for money.
Uh-huh.
It couldn't be firm with them. In Tzarki Tzibu, was firm, very firm, and not in debt.
Uh-huh.
He also never rebuked a bocher, because he felt that the bocher would be hurt too strongly.
Uh-huh.
Him. Uh-huh. Once at the meal, something else, accidentally they didn't put a setting at his where he sat.
Uh-huh.
He did not have a fork, but he did not request a fork, but looked around searching for one in front of him.
Yeah.
So of course, I said, someone got up and got him a fork.
Yeah.
It is for it.
Uh-huh.
There was one bocher there, because he stuttered somewhat, the yeshiva called him in and suggested that he leave the yeshiva temporarily to go to New York in order to be able to visit a speech therapist.
Uh-huh.
The yeshiva held that it was necessary for a shidduch.
Yeah.
The bacher didn't want to leave Lakewood yeshiva. He refused. The yeshiva called him in a second and a third time, and the bacher still refused.
Hold on a second. Yeah, go ahead. He called him in.
Yeah, yeshiva then did not relent.
Yeah.
And asked the best bacher in yeshiva to attempt to talk to me and persuade me to go.
Mm-hmm.
The bacher still refused.
Mm-hmm.
This is how the yeshiva went, to how far he went to attempt to benefit someone whom he felt needed his help.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. And the other incidents, recollections.
Let me further. In the last half year of his life, he finally acquired a secretary. He saw her Hershey from his welcome. To act as his chauffeur, secretary, to answer the phone, to call people, to arrange appointments, etc. Until then, he didn't have a car. He went, if he got a car ride, good. If not, he took public bus transportation. One evening, the secretary came. He came back to his yeshiva's apartment at 9 p.m. and said the yeshiva had left the apartment at 9 a.m. And it just came back now at 9 p.m. and not yet eaten anything in between. Always on the go, here, there, here, there. If that person, it was a schedule that he, Sucker Hirsch, found too difficult.
He couldn't handle it himself. Yes.
That is more or less a normal day. Running from one office to another, running from one fundraising attempt to another.
He went by himself.
Well, I don't know. Well, when they had this person, I guess this person accompanied him. Before that, a few years before that, they got a car for you for Yusha Shiva.
Yes.
But no driver. So then the Bochum Yeshiva knew how to drive, had to donate one on a rotating basis to go to Lakewood and drive the Yeshiva around. And that person was with him, I guess.
Well,
at the time, maybe someone else. I don't know that. Even, let me see. Because by the Shiva called Dover Godel, Dover Cotton was on his shoulders. And again, it went along, went more. And I first came to Lakewood, there was other Dailim around. But gradually, a few of them came near, were Nifter. So the problem with that Yeshiva, major problem, or Bochum, that they had problems, came to him.
Some other yeshivas.
Yes, some other yeshivas had major problems.
It was a major yayitz.
Yes. When you could get to him, you know.
But he let them do that.
So and there were problems between institutions. Everything came to him. Even when he finally arrived in yeshiva from New York, he was constantly receiving phone calls. Calling for Eretz Yisrael. Kinchas Moy threatening a strike.
What?
Kinchas Moy, for instance, example.
Yeah.
Threatening a strike. The teacher, the
Malabra,
didn't get
paid.
And other things like this. A breakfast session usually lasts about an hour and a half because of unnecessary discussions with members of the faculty and Talmidim who had been waiting for him all week. Discuss something. And phone calls.
Okay. What are the incidents you recall?
A personal episode when I became of age, Dennis Shuduchim, Rosh Hashiva called me in into his room and suggested because. That already said. Every Yom Kippur, custom in Yeshiva was that after the Shmooze, both the Talmidim lined up and asked the yeshiva for a bracha.
After Kol Nidre.
After Kol Nidre and after the Shmooze. Then they took the Sefer Torah around the whole
Olam.
And everyone kissed it. And I noted then that there was a tear on his cheek. From fright. From years, Hashem.
Oh, wow.
I bet you I felt that it wasn't right to take time with Yeshiva on such an important night. That only one night of Leil Yom Kippur as if it brought them.
But some people came.
Yeah, well, I think most of them. That year, my wife gave birth to a child and it died within the first day. That died early Friday morning. That night, Leil Shabbos Friday night, as I passed by with Yeshiva to say good Shabbos, like everybody did, I noticed that he cringed as I passed.
He knew about it.
Yeah, like he jerked back with tremendous pain on his face.
Sensitivity.
Yeah. I have several recollections of his meetings of Kedusha and Prishus.
Yeah, I'll say that.
One summer day, a mother came to visit her son, who was a summer town lead.
Yeah.
At that time, the early years, they had some bunkers coming for the summer.
Yeah.
YU, some stood.
Yeah.
A bunker was one speaker of yeshiva and a summer. All of a sudden, the yeshiva suddenly lowered his head into his hands.
Uh-huh.
The reason being that a mother had come to visit her son, who learned the YU, the yeshiva for the summer.
Uh-huh.
She was just entering the building.
Uh-huh.
The yeshiva noticed it from his room. His room faced the entrance,
uh-huh.
The entrance was in the middle of the building.
Uh-huh.
Since she was improperly clad,
yeah.
He immediately dropped his head into his hands.
Uh-huh.
Before she was able to speak to yeshiva, so she was about to, she was left a sweater or something.
Uh-huh.
Another episode that I personally observed, about the yeshiva, in the afternoon, a group of Kollel ladies were walking on the opposite side of yeshiva, First Avenue, approaching 7th Street,
uh-huh.
coming toward the corner of 4th and 7th.
Yeah.
Just at that time, the yeshiva walked out of the building and was walking a bit diagonally toward the same corner.
Uh-huh.
When the women saw him, he was going to the corner, facing the other way.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I think that's it that I have written down.
Do you have anything else that comes to mind?
Come to mind, I'll have to think about it a bit more, and then I'll give you a call for...
Could you say anything about the entire impression that you were left with for life? By being in his presence, how it affected you?
I once told a chaver of mine that the Talmid of yeshiva in his time, he said, "Ve'inecha rosh es morecha."
Uh-huh.
If you picture him, it would be positive. He serves in generally serves.
Uh-huh.
Just picture him walking. Learning, davening, saying yeshiva, anything.
You still see it.
It would arouse anyone, especially a Talmud who lived through it.
I mean, you still get this picture in your mind.
Yeah. I have to admit, later it's been, in the beginning it was more, and later I've been a bit, not as much.
Faded.
Yeah, faded a bit.
Shkayach, thank you very much. Yeah. And Kol Tov, thank you very much, Rabbi Stein.